Tato gadendrasya mano balo jasam kalena dirgena mahanna buddhvayaha avrikshyamanasya jale vasidato vipariyo bhut sakalam jalo kasam. You can repeat. Tataha.
Tataha.
Thereafter.
Thereafter.
Gaja Indrasya, of the king of the elephants, Manaha, of the strength of enthusiasm, Bala,
the physical strength,
Ojasam,
and the strength of the senses.
Kalena,
because of years of fighting.
Dirgena,
prolonged.
Mahan,
great.
Abhut,
became.
Vayaha,
the expenditure.
Vrikshamanasya,
who is being pulled,
by the crocodile.
Jale,
into the water.
A foreign place.
Avasidataha,
reduced.
Mental, physical, and sensory strength. Viparyayaha,
the opposite.
Abhut,
became.
Sakalam,
all of them.
Jalaokasaha,
the crocodile whose home is the water.
So the translation is, thereafter, because of being pulled into the water and fighting for many long years, the elephant became diminished in his mental, physical, and sensual strength. The crocodile, on the contrary, being an animal of the water, increased in enthusiasm, physical strength, and sensual power. So you can repeat. Thereafter, because of being pulled into the water, and fighting for many long years, the elephant became diminished. In his mental, physical, and sensual strength. The crocodile, on the contrary, being an animal of the water, increased in enthusiasm, physical strength, and sensual power. So, purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. In the fighting between the elephant and the crocodile, the difference was that although the elephant was extremely powerful, he was in a foreign place in the water. During 1,000 years of fighting, he could not get any food, and under the circumstances, his bodily strength diminished. And because his bodily strength diminished, his mind became weak and his senses less powerful. The crocodile, however, being an animal of the water, had no difficulties. He was getting food and was therefore getting mental strength and sensual encouragement. Thus, while the elephant became reduced in strength, the crocodile became more and more powerful. Now, from this, we may take the lesson that in our fight with Maya, we should not be in a position in which our strength, enthusiasm, and senses will be unable to fight vigorously. Our Krishna consciousness movement has actually declared war against the illusory energy in which all the living entities are rotting in a false understanding of civilization. The soldiers in this Krishna consciousness movement must always possess physical strength, enthusiasm, and sensual power. To keep themselves fit, they must therefore place themselves in a normal condition of life. What constitutes a normal condition will not be the same for everyone, and therefore there are divisions of Varnashrama, Brahmana, Kshatriya, Vaishya, Shudra, Brahmacharya, Grahastha, Vanaprastha, and Sannyasa. Especially in this age, Kali Yuga, it is advised that no one takes sannyas. Ashramedam gavalambam sannyasam palapaitrakam Adevarena sutodpattim kalopancha vivarjayat. That's from the Brahma Vivarta Purana. From this we can understand that in this age the sannyasa ashram is forbidden because people are not strong. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu showed us an example in taking sannyasa at the age of 24 years. But even Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya advised Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu to be extremely careful because he had taken sannyasa at an early age. For preaching, we are giving young boys sannyasa. But actually, it is being experienced they are not fit for sannyasa. There is no harm, however, if one thinks that he is unfit for sannyasa. If he is very much agitated sexually, he should go to the ashram where sex is allowed, namely the grihastha ashram. That one has been found to be very weak in one place does not mean that he should stop fighting the crocodile of Maya. One should take shelter of the lotus feet of Krishna, as we see Gajendra do. And at the same time, one can be a grihastha if he is satisfied with sexual indulgence. There is no need to give up the fight. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu therefore recommended, Stanes ta shudikatam tan van mano bir. One may stay in whichever ashram is suitable for him. It is not essential that one take sannyas. If one is sexually agitated, he can enter the grihastha ashram. But one must continue fighting. For one who is not in a transcendental position to take sannyas artificially is not a very great credit. If sannyas is not suitable, one may enter the grihastha ashram and fight Maya with great enthusiasm and strength. But one should not give up the fighting and go away. Okay, so Omagana Timananda Shah. Gananjana Shlakaya Chakshurun Miditam Genantas Mai Shigurave Namaha. So, there's an interesting story about this particular part of the Bhagavatam and, of course, Srila Prabhupada's purport. It involves what we call the context in which Srila Prabhupada wrote that purport. That means what was happening at the same time. That's the context. Because there were things happening in the real world. Like you find Srila Prabhupada's purports are oftentimes commenting upon what he encounters in life. That means doing things, going out and preaching, or even reading a newspaper. He'll comment on those things in his purports. So what was happening in the Krishna conscious movement is very interesting. There was one person who was a sannyasi, and some of you may have heard his name. His name was Vishnu Jan Maharaj. And what happened is that he had some spiritual trouble. And at the same time, Prabhupada was telling the story of Junya Haridas. Some of you may have heard that story from the Chaitanya Charitamrita. Junya Haridas was an associate of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And what happened is that he was asked one time to get some rice for Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's lunch. So what he did is he went to a lady's home. Her name was Madhavi Devidas. She was an older lady and, you know, knocked on the door, please give me some rice. She gave him some rice and obviously there was something inappropriate that occurred, either with her or her daughter or something that's not really mentioned. But he did contemplate sense objects. And for a sannyasi, that's actually prohibited. A sannyasi who contemplates sense objects is called a vitangsi. That means someone who, I don't even want to say, who eats his own vomit. Horrible expression, actually. So, and then he went back and delivered the rice to this devotee, I think, Sikhi Mahiti, whoever was cooking the rice for Lord Chaitanya, and Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu asked, who has gotten this nice rice? And they described that this rice was gotten by this junior Haridas, not the older Haridas Thakur. And Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu got very angry and he said, I don't want to see the face of someone who contemplates sense gratification in the renounced order of life. And so he rejected Junior Haridas' association. Junior Haridas was a great chanter. He would chant for Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu for hours before. And then the devotees kept pleading with Lord Chaitanya, please see him again. And then basically Lord Chaitanya refused to see him. And then after a year, Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, okay, I'll see him again. And they said, well, we don't know where he is. Then later, some people came back from the Triveni. Triveni means where the three sacred rivers are joined. Ganga, Jamuna, Saraswati. And told the story of how a sannyasi who went to the middle of the river and he tied some stones or rocks or something like that to him and jumped in the river and committed suicide. It's interesting, in India, you know, the traditional method of committing suicide is to go in the river. In America, it's hanging yourself. Or nowadays, it's what? Shooting yourself in the head. But in India, it was going into the river. And so you see, this is done in many places, but we're not advocating, because Prabhupada said that one who commits suicide, it becomes a ghost. You know what a ghost is? I don't know. Someone who haunts you. Someone who has a subtle body, has the same desires that we have. However, he can't eat, he can't enjoy life. He can't dance, he can't chant or anything like that, because he's a ghost. And usually ghosts reside in bars. You know what a bar is anywhere? No, that's where people drink liquor. So Prabhupada said someone who commits suicide, dies a violent death, or dies under the influence of drugs, becomes a ghost in his next life, or not even next life, a ghost. So Haridas Thakur did this, and what happened is that a few days later, Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was sitting near the ocean in Jagannath Puri, and the devotees heard the chanting of Junior Haridas. And when they heard the chanting of Junior Haridas, they thought, where is he? And they said, maybe he's become a ghost. But actually, he had become like a Gandharva, or a subtle, higher living entity who was associated with Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu at that time. And so it says in the purport, Srila Prabhupada's purport, that Lord Chaitanya was teaching us the importance of keeping one's vows in Krishna consciousness, one's promises. Actually, promises are very important. That's a subject matter I want to really talk about for a second. In Kali Yuga, promises are part of the principle of truthfulness, which is the only remaining principle of religiosity in Kali Yuga. What are the other three? Does anyone know? What are the other principles of religiosity? Does anyone know?
Mercifulness.
Austerity. And cleanliness. So truthfulness is the only one remaining. The metaphorical presentation in the Bhagavatam is that the legs of the bull are being cut by the personality of Kali. Actually, it's interesting, in Fiji, which we spend a lot of time on, the GBC of Fiji, sometimes the natives come, if there's a cow out there, and they cut his legs off, right? They're like Kali's representatives. That's why many people in Fiji can't keep cows, because isn't it true?
Yeah.
And they just leave the cow there to die without his legs. Very terrible. So that's Kali. So truthfulness also means when you make a promise, you keep a promise. Like you see many examples in the Mahabharata of great personalities who made a promise and they stuck to their promises no matter what. Can anyone think of an example?
Bhishma.
Grandfather Bhishma, Pitamaha. He made a promise never to get married, never to be in charge of the kingdom, and to always support whoever was the king or the emperor. And of course, a lot of those times, that promise got him in trouble. But then even Arjuna, who is known for his great determination, he made several very, very interesting promises. Once upon a time, he promised, this is an interesting, little funny story, he promised that anyone who insulted his Gandiva bow, he would kill immediately. You know, if someone said, you have a terrible Gandiva bow, okay, you'll see how terrible it is. So, it was during the battlefield, or the battle of Kurukshetra, Yudhisthira Maharaj had gotten injured, and he was back at the camp, and Arjuna wanted to see what was the problem. So we went to Yudhisthira Maharaj, and Yudhisthira Maharaj was so upset that Arjuna had left the battlefield. He says, what is the use of your Gandiva bow? You should just give it up. And Arjuna said, well, I made a promise. I have to kill Yudhisthira Maharaj now. So he took the bow out and was getting ready to fire an arrow at his brother. Pretty bad, isn't it? And Krishna said, no, this is not a good idea. So you have to think of another way of killing him. Actually, you can kill someone in the Vedic context by insulting them. So things were so strict in those days that if you used the familiar tomb in regard to someone who was elder than you, it was considered an insult. Hmm. In English, of course, we only have one you. There's not a familiar and not a formal you. But in Sanskrit and also in Hindi, there's the familiar and the formal. So, ap or tum, like this. So anyway, Arjuna, he insulted Yudhisthira Maharaj, and he said, in this way, I've killed you. But then what happened is that Arjuna felt so bad. Couldn't you imagine children or younger brothers being so obedient nowadays? Now the children go to their parents. Not only do they say you, they say, hey, dad. Or hey, they even call the parents by their name then now. Hey, Nilacho, where's the prasadam? Yes, it's really Kali Yuga. There used to be formality. I mean, you'd call your father Pitashri, and even the wife would call the husband Swami. Did you know that? Which means master. Nowadays they don't say that. They say slave. And the husband would call the wife, Priya. Different names. It's very nice. It's actually very nice to have this sort of etiquette. Priya, Swami, just nice words like this. People wouldn't even use the names. They would use the titles. And it's a very elevated way of dealing with each other. So when Arjuna understood that he had insulted his brother, he thought, now I have to kill myself because I've insulted my brother. So he got ready to kill himself, and Krishna said, that's not a good idea either. And so Krishna said, you can kill yourself without killing yourself by praising yourself. So Arjuna proceeded to praise himself and say, I'm the great Arjuna, no one can defeat me, I'm wonderful, I'm fantastic. And that way, he had killed himself by praising himself. You see how strict the Vedic etiquette was? You're not supposed to praise yourself in front of elders. You're not supposed to be too familiar with elders. You're supposed to be respectful with elders. Otherwise, you destroy the whole etiquette of society. I mean, etiquette is very important. It keeps society in order. So, anyway, so Arjuna kept his... Another instance of Arjuna keeping his promise was when Abhimanyu was killed by the Kauravas, and, of course, the Kauravas, they ganged up on him. They all fought with him simultaneously, and they killed Abhimanyu. And so, basically, the fault lay in Jayadrath. I think you all know who Jayadrath is. Because Jayadrath had got a benediction from Lord Shiva that he would be able to defeat four of the Pandavas in one day. Someone's phone is ringing. Okay. You hear it?
Yeah.
I have very good ears. I can hear all that. So he got a benediction that he could defeat four of the Kauravas in one day. He was able to hold them off while the Kauravas did this chakra vyuha formation. And Abhimanyu was the only one who understood how to enter into it, and he was blocked. The other Kauravas were blocked from defending him, and they killed Abhimanyu. So Arjuna made a promise. So strict was his promise that he said, if I don't kill Abhimanyu this next day, then I'm going to enter into the fire and kill myself. And so Krishna said to Arjuna, why are you making promises without talking to me first? And so Arjuna said, don't worry, I'll be able to do it. And Krishna said, only with my help will you be able to do it. So the next day, we all know the story that Krishna and Arjuna were approaching Jayadrath on the chariot, and the whole Kaurava army was trying to defend Jayadrath. And finally, Krishna made it seem like the sun was going down, when it actually wasn't going down. And the Kaurava army laid down their arms, and they were defenseless, and Arjuna was able to fire the arrow, and not only chop off the head,
Hare Krishna.
Not only chop off the head of Jayadrath, but he was able to make the head of Jayadrath fly through the air onto the lap of Jayadrath's father, who had the benediction that whoever caused his son's head to fall to the ground would die, his head would split and burn to ashes. And so so Jayadrath's father actually died. Very, very interesting story. So anyway, these are two instances of keeping promises. So getting back to the story, so Prabhupada very much emphasized keeping promises, especially at the time of initiation. One takes a vow or a promise. And if one wants to advance in Krishna consciousness, one never breaks his promise. Like at initiation, we make a promise of no gambling, no illicit sex, no meat eating or intoxication. And also chanting 64 rounds. That's what I do on a codicil, but 16 rounds every day. And so one should be very determined to keep that promise no matter what. And I joined the Krishna Consciousness Movement in 1971. And I always kept my promise of chanting every day, even if it meant staying up till midnight to finish my rounds, or even if I was sick, laying in bed, you know, chanting very slowly the mantras. So we always keep our promise. We should be so determined. Whatever you promise, don't promise something you can't keep. That's very important. Know your limits. Know what you can do. If you can only chant 4 rounds, chant 4 rounds, but then you're not ready for initiation. That's all right. But don't make a promise that you will not be able to keep. Of course, the only time you don't have to keep that promise, if you're initiated and you made a promise of chanting 16 rounds, is when you're in a coma. That's what's called an extenuating circumstance. Everybody knows what a coma is? Anybody know what a coma is? Coma is when you're in the hospital and you're not brain dead, that's different. Brain dead, you don't have to worry about chanting rounds ever. Because then they just pull the plug and you go back to Godhead. Hopefully if someone is chanting next to your bed. But a coma means there's some chance of coming out. Chance of coming out. Usually it's not brain dead. For example, I had one friend. He had a severe case of asthma. And one day, he just went unconscious. They took him to the hospital, and for 5 days he was in the intensive care unit. He was in a coma. So what I did is I went there and I chanted for him, and I was watching the monitor there over his head to see, you know, if he was going to die or not. And then his mother came in. She wasn't a devotee. And she kept saying material things to him. Oh, my dear Jeffrey, I love you. Don't leave me. Oh, we love you. Think of your daddy. Think of all the fun you had going to Disneyland when you were young. And I was watching the monitor. I said, if he starts to die, I'm getting rid of this old lady. Because, yam yam vapi smaran bhavam yajateyanti kalevram. Whatever one thinks of at the time of death. I mean, that's compassion, isn't it? Like if you're thinking of Disneyland at the time of death, then you become mouse. Right? Or a duck. And I wouldn't want my devotee friend becoming a duck or a mouse. So whatever you're thinking of. So that's the only time one doesn't have to chant. So one should make vows that are appropriate. That's the whole point of this particular verse. So getting back to the story, so this particular devotee heard the story that Prabhupada was telling about Junior Haridas. And then what he did is he disappeared, and later on he went to the Triveni, the Sangam, and he left his body. And Prabhupada wasn't pleased with this. Prabhupada said, no, this is not appropriate for someone to do that. It's better that one goes on serving Krishna than leaving his body. Mm. Of course, the best thing is that one actually understands his particular varna and his particular ashram in which he is most comfortable in, and not be a cheater. On the other hand, we have people who sometimes act like sannyasis who are complete debauchees or cheaters. Like when Prabhupada was young, he was living with his family, and next door to him, there was a man, and his job every day was being a sannyasi. During the night, he was a householder, and during the day, he was a sannyasi. Because a sannyasi has, You see the upper cape of the sannyasi. You know what that's meant for? Bhiksha. It's meant for begging. Traditionally, the sannyasi would get grains. Nowadays, it's just gold, money, credit cards, everything. It's Kali Yuga sannyasi, so. But it's true. But traditionally, it was meant for begging. It was meant for begging. So, this particular individual who was living next door to Prabhupada, every day he'd put on his saffron dhoti and go out begging, and he'd give everything to his wife at night. And then he'd change back into his white dhoti and take care of his family. So that's cheating. And so generally, we find this quote from the Brahmavibharata Purana, which I read in Srila Prabhupada's purport, where sannyasa is forbidden in Kali Yuga. Because in Kali Yuga, there's so many cheats. Like you see in so many religions, whether the religion is from the West, that is America or whatever, or from India, there's so many cheaters coming. Like Prabhupada sometimes would say during the 1960s and 70s, he was saying there's so many gods coming from India. Prabhupada said practically every week another god is coming. So many people think they're their god, and they make money by being god. They're not actually god. And they're cheating. There was one god in the 1960s, and I'm not going to mention his name because it's impious to mention his name. But anyway, he was a young man, and this particular god fell into Maya. He ran away with his secretary. And so his mother was very upset that my son god, has run away with his secretary, so she went to court in India, of course, to declare that her other son was the actual god. And the first son was not God. That's because this God has so much property and money and everything like that. Otherwise, who's interested in being God if you can't make money at it? So the point is there, and then so many people come and say they're God, and it's so interesting. Even in the 1960s, there was someone from Korea who said he was God. You know, Korea? Not North Korea, it was from South Korea. I'm not going to mention his name, it's just like, it's impious. But he said he was God, and he had thousands of followers. So basically in Kali Yuga, it's basically cheaters and cheated. You can very easily get cheated by someone who declares something, can do some mystical little trick, who can be charismatic, and people will follow them. There's so many fools, and there's so many people willing to cheat the fools in Kali Yuga, and to exploit the fools in Kali Yuga. So therefore, in Kali Yuga, it's generally advised that sannyasa is prohibited, because this is can be used as a method of preaching. However, sannyasa is allowed when one is able to keep to the principles and is able to preach Krishna consciousness. Otherwise, there's no need for the sannyas order. Like Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu took sannyas. It's an interesting story. Before he took sannyas, many of his students were criticizing him because he was exhibiting ecstasies. Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, in addition to chanting the names of Krishna, sometimes would chant the names of the gopis. He would chant gopis because he was actually Krishna. But sometimes, or most of the times, he was in the mood of Radharani. Sometimes he slipped back into the mood of Krishna. So, you see in Lord Chaitanya's passage, quite interesting. Sometimes he would sit on the altar in Shivas Thakur's house and manifest his position as Krishna. Other times he would be feeling separation from Krishna. Hmm. So when Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu chanted Gopi, 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 his students criticized him. In fact, one student said, no, you should chant Krishna's names instead of Gopi. And Lord Chaitanya at that point was actually angry at Krishna. It's interesting, Lord Chaitanya was angry at Krishna. Because sometimes the gopis get angry with Krishna. Why? Because he neglects them, and because it gives Krishna pleasure to have the gopis angry with him. Just like sometimes between a man and his wife, the man wants to make his wife aggravated, because it gives him some happiness, right? That's part of normal, if you ever watch a Bollywood movie, you'd understand what I'm talking about. So Krishna was in the mood at that time of Srimati Radharani, or Lord Chaitanya was in the mood of Radharani, and he basically was said to his student who criticized him for chanting the names of the gopis, he said, "We don't want to hear about this Krishna. He's a rascal. We don't want to chant his name. He cut off the nose of this beautiful girl." What pastime was that? Sukhanda. Whose nose did he cut off? Surpanaka. He cut off Surpanaka. Cut her ears and her nose off. Horrible what Krishna does. And she came to him out of love. And then when he was a baby, he just killed a very nice lady. Who was that? Putana. And then, in addition, Krishna killed a bull. Who was that? Arishtasura. And then Krishna killed a calf. Who was that? Vatsasura. Vatsasura. So in this way, Lord Chaitanya was criticizing Krishna. And his students got really angry, and then Lord Chaitanya started to chase the student with a stick. And the student ran to the other students and said, "Look, Nimai Pandit's gone crazy." And the student said, "Yeah, he's gone crazy," and they began to criticize him. And then Lord Chaitanya thought that now I'm causing people to go to hell, basically, by criticizing me, because, you know, he's God. So this is not good, so I'll take sannyas. So he decided to take sannyas so the people would respect him to listen to his preaching, because that's the Vedic system. In the Vedic system, naturally, the sannyasi is considered the spiritual master of all the other ashrams. So therefore, in that case, sannyas is necessary. And Srila Prabhupada gave so many people sannyas, and as a result, the world became filled with Krishna consciousness by that strategy. So sannyas is necessary. However, it is not necessary to be a sannyasi to become Krishna conscious. It's necessary for preaching. There's a difference. Become Krishna conscious. Prabhupada quoted this verse in the purport that was spoken by Lord Brahma. Stane stata shudikatam tanvan monobhir. Which means, stane, just stay wherever you are and be absorbed in Krishna's name. Shudikatam tan. In your mind, in your body, your words, absorbed in Krishna's name. So whatever you are, whether you're sannyasi, grahastha, vanaprastha, sannyas, or brahman, kshatriya, vaishya, shudra, it doesn't matter. If you're absorbed in Krishna's names, you can reach perfection. Krishna varnam tvisa krishnam sango pangashra parshanam yadyahi sankirtana prayari yajanti hi sumedasa. Those who have sufficient brain stuff in Kali Yuga will take shelter of Krishna's names. So, but it's also important to be stable materially. That's why we have the Varnashram system. So one has to be able to understand where you fit in. In other words, should you be a grahastha, vanaprastha, sannyasi, brahmachari, or even, in one sense more important, should you be a brahman, kshatriya, vaishya, or what? Shudra. I think he knows. Aniruddha. Very good. Very intelligent. So what should you be? Any of those four things. So how do you find out what's your proper situation? You know, whether you should be a Brahmin. Let's talk about Brahmin, Kshatriya, Vaishya, Shudra first. That's very easy. And I'll give you an example from the Mahabharata, how you can tell. This is the story of when Arjuna won Draupadi. So you had the five Pandavas. They were actually in hiding. And they made believe that they were what? Brahmins. Because this was after the House of Lakh, the attempted murder in the House of Lakh. So they made believe that they were Brahmins. And they came to the sacrifice, what's called the Swayamvara. A Swayamvara literally means that the lady chooses her own. It's not like a soccer game in which the lady becomes the prize. Or the Olympics, you know, the Olympics, where the gold medal is a beautiful girl you get to take home with you. Because she has a right, that's a misunderstanding that people have. And usually at the Swayamvara, there is a fighting, And sometimes there's blood. And that's really where the red dot came from. Did you know that? That's the blood that when you're, the man is fighting his enemies to win his wife, and there was blood, and he puts the blood of the enemies on the forehead of the wife. Now they don't use blood anymore. But that's how it came about. It's very romantic, isn't it? So you could just look at your wedding pictures and say, oh, here's how I killed so many people to marry them. And the man is a great hero to the wife. It's very nice, isn't it? But nowadays it's not like that. So the Pandavas went to the Swayamvara Draupadi, and you know, you had to fire the arrow, the eye of the fish, and the revolving wheel, looking at a lake, a body of water. And basically, of course, Karna came up, but Draupadi said no. We cannot accept him because he's a Shudra's son. And then Arjuna came up, and he was able to do this. And he took Draupadi home with him, or back to where the Pandavas were staying. At the same time, Bhimsen had to hold off the rest of the soldiers because they were really upset that a Brahmana had won this particular Swayamvara. So Drupada did not understand what Varna Arjuna was, because he thought he was a Brahmin, but he didn't act like a Brahmin. And he really didn't know. So he sent his son's name was Dhrishtadyumna. Now, Dhrishtadyumna was also born from the fire. Just like Draupadi is called Yajnasena. That means the lady who came out of a fire. So he sent his son just to back to report on the Pandavas, and he saw that somehow or other, Draupadi was going to get married to all 5 Pandavas. That was the first thing he saw. That was shocking. You know, his little sister was going to marry 5 men. Because when Arjuna brought Draupadi back, he said to his mother, Kunti Devi, he said, I brought something back nice for us, Mom. And she said, you should share it with all of your brothers. And they said, oh, how can we share this lady? And so when Kunti Devi looked up and she saw it was a girl, Kunti Devi was shocked. She said, well, whatever I said has to come true. And then it was shown that in a previous birth, Draupadi had prayed to Lord Shiva for a husband, and she had prayed so enthusiastically, she prayed 5 times. She prayed, I want a husband, I want a husband, I want a husband, I want a husband, I want a husband. And Lord Shiva said, okay, you get 5 of them. 5 for the price of 1. And she said, that's not what I meant. But then she had to accept in her next life. So, Dhrishtadyumna reported back that she had married 5 all Pandavas. And Drupada was trying to figure out still, are the Pandavas Kshatriyas, Vaishyas, Shudras, or Brahmins? So what he did is when the Pandavas entered into his palace, he put out different implements for different varnas. In other words, for the Kshatriyas, he put out swords and clubs. They didn't have guns in those days, so couldn't have guns. And arrows and bows. For the Brahmanas, he put out some Vedic literatures. For the Vaishyas, he put out a bunch of money. And for the Shudras, he put out, I guess, hammers and nails or something like that, whatever Shudras like to use. And so when the Pandavas walked in to Drupada's palace, they immediately went for the weapons. They picked them up and went, very nice. Oh, not a gun. Yeah, forget about that. So, very nice. Isn't this wonderful? And then Drupada immediately understood that they were Kshatriyas. And sometimes we do that with children, too. They do that here. They have the children pick the different things. You know, sometimes the children pick the money, sometimes they pick the books, and sometimes they pick the hammer and nails. But that's all right, because Krishna says anyone in any of the varnas can become Krishna conscious if he does his prescribed duty. Everyone should follow his own path and not actually imitate someone else, even if he can do it better. So, the question is, how do we know what varna we are in or we're attracted to? Obviously, we're not going to put out weapons in front of you, because you're going to be embarrassed to take them if you're interested in them. And we're not going to put out money, because you're not going to, in front of everybody, you're not going to do that. But you can think, what would you like to do and could do for 12 hours every day without getting bored? That's a good way to think about it. Because you can do a lot of things. I mean, for example, in my own life, I have a background where I study technology and so many things. I can do so many things. I know how to fix a car. I know how to do a lot of things, play music. But what would I like to do for 12 hours a day without going crazy? And, you know, I like to speak about Krishna all day long and read Prabhupada's books and learn philosophy. So that's a Brahman. And if you'd like to be in the stock market all day long, some people like that, isn't it? They watch what's it called, the ticker tape. You know what ticker tape is? So-and-so, AT&T, up 3 points. Other company down 2.5, and they're just watching. You see men actually going like that all day long. Then you're probably a Vaishya. And if you like working with your hands and artwork and dancing and music a lot, and you can do that all day long, then you're probably a Shudra. There's no problem. Being a Shudra is not a bad thing. They're pure devotee Shudras, they're pure devotee Brahmins, they're pure devotee Kshatriyas, and they're pure devotee Vaishyas. And there's demon Brahmins. Can anyone think of a demon Brahmin? Ravana, yeah. Ravana's history is very interesting. Because Ravana had... thank you for mentioning that. I was thinking of someone else, but I'll tell the story of Ravana. The Shukracharya was the person I was thinking of. But Ravana's history is very interesting, that his father was Vishravas. And such an interesting history. Now that you mention, I have to tell this story. That what happened is this... Vishravas was married to a very nice Brahmin lady. And he had a very wonderful son, and that son's name was Kuvera. But then the demons thought, we want to become more powerful because we can't defeat the demigods anymore because the demigods have drunk the amrit, you know, the nectar that they churn from the milk ocean. So then he thought, we have to send our most beautiful daughter to meet with this sage, Vishravas. And her name is Kekasi. So they send Kekasi to Vishravas, and she just basically allured him. She seduced him. She said, Vishravas, you're so handsome. And eventually they had a child, and that child was nice little baby, Ravana. And that's how Ravana came. So he was actually born in a Brahmin family, mixed Brahmin and demon. That's beyond Varnashram, there's demon. There's Chandala, Asura, and all these other categories. So that was Ravana. But I was thinking of Shukracharya, who was actually a Brahmin, but he was always envious of Brahaspati, so he became the spiritual master of the demons. And because of that, he committed so many offenses and also had his eye poked out by Lord Vamanadev. So anyway, you could be a Brahmin demon, or you can be a Vaishya demon, you could be a Kshatriya demon, and there's many Kshatriya demons. I mean, the Kurus, you know, the hundred sons of Dhritarashtra were Kshatriya demons. And you can be a Shudra demon, or you can be a Shudra pure devotee. I mean, look at Haridas Thakur. I mean, what was his Varna? Basically, his Varna was considered less than Shudra, right? Because he was born outside of the Varnashram system in a Muslim family. Yet he was a great pure devotee, one of the greatest pure devotees, the Namacharya, the Acharya of the holy names. So it's really not important spiritually what Varna you're in. We do not have this conception of a caste system in the Krishna consciousness movement. The caste system was so bad in India that the Muslims use the caste system to make Muslims, and the Christians use the caste systems to convert Christians. What they did is they said to the lower caste people, the outcasts or scheduled castes as you call them nowadays, they said to them, you're rejected by society, but we accept you. We will give you education. We will give you everything. And then all these people converted either to Muslim religion or the Christian religion. So the caste system, there have been many revolts against the caste system. Actually, even Buddhism was a revolt against the caste system. This was a very interesting history with that. That, of course, at that time, the Brahmanas liked the caste system. You know why the Brahmanas liked the caste system? It gives them a monopoly. Because when you can restrict spiritual life or the teaching of different yajnas and samskaras to Brahmins, and then you can charge for it, what do they say? The law of supply and demand? You've heard of that before? If you can restrict the supply and the demand remains constant, what happens? Anyone study economics here? The price goes up. You have to ration everything, and the price goes up. That's economic principle. So the Brahmanas like this caste system. And so if you have a name like Sharma or Trivedi or Chaturvedi or Dvivedi, or, you know, there's a whole bunch of names. Ekavedi, I made up that name. So there's no such name like that, but anyway. So if you have a name like that, then you can be... I remember in Fiji, because we spent a lot of time in Fiji and the GBC there, they even have registered Brahmins, right? That you register with the government, and there's the head of the Brahmin Sabha, and so I met the head of all the Brahmins in Fiji, and he was drinking and smoking. And I said, what kind of Brahmin are you? And he said, Kali Yuga Brahmin. No, he didn't say that to me. I was thinking that. So, and of course it says that many times, Bhagavatam says many times in Kali Yuga that demons will be born in Brahmin families in Kali Yuga. Not everybody, but sometimes that will happen like that. So we do not consider what someone's caste is. In fact, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu says that. Kiva vipra, kiva vyasi, shudra kena na, ye krishna tattva veta, se guru hoy. Whether one is shudra, kiva vipra, learned person, it doesn't matter. If one knows the science of Krishna, he can be considered a guru or an instructor. So we don't consider the past, we consider the guna and karma. According to Krishna in the Gita, chatur varna mayashista, guna karma vibhagasha. One should be understood in terms of the guna and karma. So, anyway, each and every one of us has to determine for ourselves what is our guna and karma and engage in Krishna consciousness accordingly, and you have equal opportunity to go back to Godhead. It's not that because I'm sitting here giving class that I have more opportunity or I will go back to Godhead sooner. The humble street sweeper or bungee even, if he's a devotee, he can go back to Godhead before me. If he takes shelter of Krishna's holy names, that's the real point. But still, in order to take shelter of Krishna's holy names, we have to be situated in a varna where we're comfortable. Otherwise, we're not going to be happy. We have material needs as well as spiritual needs. Bhakti Vinod Thakur, in his Chaitanya Shikshamrita, he mentions that we all have material needs that have to be satisfied in order to be stable in Krishna consciousness. So someone may have the need to have a family, that's fine. And someone may have another need within the purview of the Vedic injunctions. You know, someone may have a need to study a lot. Someone may have a need to work with his hands to be a sculptor. But do it for Krishna. Yat karoshi yadashnashi, yajahoshi didasyat, yatabhashashi kuntiya, tat kurushwa madarpanam. Whatever you do, whatever you offer, whatever you give away, if you do it for Krishna, that's the perfection. So no one here has to think that you have to become a sannyasi in order to be Krishna conscious. It's not like that. Just wherever you do, whatever you're doing, do it for Krishna. Give the results of your activities, karma yoga, give the results of your activities to Krishna and the Krishna consciousness movement, and personally cultivate, practice sadhana bhakti. Sadhana bhakti means the practice of bhakti yoga. Okay, so now we can take some questions. That was the talk. Yeah.
I'm sorry I came late, but I have a question on the topic you just discussed.
Yeah.
Like about the Brahmin Kshatriya and Vaishya.
Vaishya, yeah.
18th chapter of Bhagavad Gita explained the qualities of this four.
Mm-hmm.
And then Krishna said, as you just said. So then, how in ISKCON, like when you come, probably coming from whatever varna you are, like,
yeah.
Then how do you gradually convert into Brahmins?
Actually, Prabhupada said that a Vaishnava is automatically a Brahmin. However, he may act in terms of the varnas to instruct others. Also, Krishna says in the Gita, yad yad acharati shrestas tatat evetaro janaha. So devotees have to act in a certain way. And also, if one is actually a devotee of the Lord, you still have certain qualities that are determined by your psychophysical nature. It doesn't change. That, you know, you have a certain type of body. You have certain propensities. You have certain abilities. I mean, for example, let's say I joined the Krishna Conscious Movement. I know what my abilities are. Maybe I can speak philosophy, but I can't dance Bharat Natyam. You know, I just can't. If I tried it, it would be the funniest thing you've ever seen in your life. Even if Krishna wanted me to do it, well, if Krishna wanted, I could do anything. But so there's certain abilities I have that are built into this body. And not Bharat Natyam is not one of them. Cricket is not another one, isn't another one that I don't have. I can't play cricket. So there are certain aspects. So one has to act in terms of the psychophysical nature of his body. Because you have talents. You have certain talents, abilities, propensities, and then you're happy. I mean, like I said, I could read all day long and I'd be happy. But if you ask me to do construction, even if a temple, you like pick up blocks and everything like that, I could do it. I know how to do it because I studied it, architecture and everything like that. But after 1 hour, forget it. Forget it. I'm not going to be able to do it. It's just too frustrating for my mind. So that's the varna aspect. And each one of us has that. So in one sense, we can be Brahmins in the sense that we know Brahman. See, that's another meaning of the word Brahman. The actual definition of Brahman is one who knows Brahman. But then there's also a Varnashram definition of Brahman as one who has a certain propensity. Samat tamat dapatsha chom shanti rajiva mevacha jnana vijnanam astikyam brahma karma subhavam. That's Krishna also in the Gita. Someone who can be equipoised, self-controlled, austere, clean, religious, honest, studying shastra, practicing shastra. So, all right. So, let's take the example of Bhimsen. Everyone's heard of Bhimsen. Was he a Brahmin? What was he?
Kshatriya.
And Bhimsen was not very equipoised. He was a pure devotee. He was like a trampled snake after the attempted disrobing of Draupadi. He, for the next 14 years, he was hissing, basically, like a trampled snake. And ultimately, what did he do to Dushasana? Does anyone remember? He tore open his chest, drank the blood, or at least made believe he drank it, and took the blood to who? And what did she do with it? Is that a Brahmin? I don't think so. If someone asked me to wash my hair with blood, no way. I wouldn't do that. And, you know, as a Brahmin, you don't have any enemies either. If someone hits you on one cheek, what do? Turn the other cheek. But as a Kshatriya, if someone hits you on one cheek, boom, an eye for an eye, a tooth for a tooth. As it says, it's very interesting, in the Western literature, the Bible, it says an eye for an eye, a tooth for a tooth. And then, that's a Kshatriya type of mentality. And a Vaishya mentality is how to make money. I mean, for example, if you send a Vaishya to the forest, he'll think of cutting down the trees and selling them. If you send a kshatriya to the forest, he'll be looking for animals to shoot. And if you send a Brahmin to the forest, he'll be chanting Hare Krishna. And if you send a shooter to the forest, he'll go to sleep. He'll hide out so they don't find him, so his boss doesn't find him, so he can just sleep. Because a shooter's determination never goes beyond dreaming, procrastination, sleep like that. So you can actually see, if you really like to sleep, you probably shoot it. So, and does that answer your question, or?
So, say, Sudra or like this person comes to Krishna consciousness.
Yeah.
And he follows the four regulations that Prabhupada say. Mm. Then he can eventually take the initiation and then
yeah.
he can take the second initiation.
Maybe not second initiation.
Right.
If maybe, but first initiation is enough to get you back to Godhead.
So you have to take the second initiation.
Second is not necessary. You simply have to chant Hare Krishna to go back to Godhead. Second initiation can help you if you can develop brahminical qualities. Only that. The Gayatri Mantra chanting can only be done effectively if you're in the mode of goodness. But the Maha Mantra, as Chaitanya Mahaprabhu states, there's no hard and fast rules for chanting. Right? No hard and fast rules for chanting. That's it. No hard and fast rules means you can chant it by anyone. It could, even animals get benefited. When Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu asked Haridas Thakur, how do the animals and inanimate entities get benefited? Haridas Thakur replied, by the loud chanting of a Hare Krishna Maha Mantra. And he described even an echo as the loud, as the chanting of the inanimate living entities. So chanting is for everybody, but second, brahminical initiation should only be done by those who are on the brahminical platform. There's no need for everybody to take second initiation. It's not a status. It's not that so you can take your Brahmin thread out and say, now I'm better than you. I remember in the early days of the movement, it was something like that. Especially I spent a lot of time in South America, where the society is very hierarchical. In America, our society is not hierarchical. Everything is one. Your mother and your father, doesn't matter, they're your buddies. But in South America, you have a hierarchy. So when you first join the movement, you're the lowest person on the totem pole, so to speak. And you get all the menial service in the temple in South America. And then, when you're 6 months in the movement, you can be the lord of those who just joined. I mean, Vedic culture is hierarchical also. Like you see with the Pandavas, like Yudhisthira, you know, he was the elder brother, so they respected him and had to listen to him, even if they didn't want to. And even with Ram and Lakshman, that Ram was always respected by Lakshman. And that's why Lakshman wanted to take birth as Ram's older brother in his next life. And that was Balaram. But the problem is that Krishna never listened to Balaram. Krishna didn't follow that etiquette. You know, he arranged for Subhadra to be kidnapped by Arjuna. So many think Balaram was continually frustrated with what Krishna did. So anyway, getting back to the point, so that hierarchy was there in South America, very interesting. And when people took Brahmin initiation, they used to take their thread out and said, I'm a Brahmin, you have to listen to me. And if you don't listen to me, you'll be committing a great offense against a Brahmin. So this is not a Brahmin. Because one of the qualities of Brahmin is he's humble. Gopi Bharata Padakamala Dasa Dasa Dasanu Dasa. So this is, you know, that's an essential quality of a Brahmin. So if one has Shudra qualities, why does he have to take second initiative? There's no need. It's just, actually, Prabhupada said, interesting statement by Prabhupada, that if one takes second initiation and he doesn't have brahminical qualities, instead of calling him a Brahmin, you can call him a sacred thread holder. A sacred thread holder. Oh, you're a sacred thread holder. Don't say that, that's an insult. But, so one has to show these brahminical qualities, being equipoised, self-controlled, ajata shatrava, I mean, there's other qualities, not having any enemies, That's what a Brahmin is. And Krishna talks about that in the Gita. Krishna talks about Kshatriya Vaishya children in the Gita too. He's very explicit. Actually, there's like four or five chapters of the Gita that deal with the three modes of nature and the people under the three modes of nature. It's very, Krishna deals a lot with the three modes of nature in the Gita. Even in the 17th and the 18th chapter, the final chapters of the Gita. He even talks about religion in different modes in the beginning of the 17th chapter. So it's important knowledge for us to have. So any other questions or comments?
No, then this is on the same question. As you mentioned, second initiation is not
required.
There must be some qualities for the first initiation also.
First initiation, the quality should be that, of course, the vow that I mentioned, you know, the four regulated principles, 16 rounds, that's one thing. But some knowledge about the philosophy of Krishna consciousness, basically what's called Sambandha Gyan. Sambandha Gyan means, who is God? You know, at least you should be able to answer those questions. Who is God? Who is Krishna? What is the soul? What happens to the soul at the time of death? What's the spiritual world? You know, what's the goal of the devotees? I mean, that's Sambandha Gyan. What's the nature of the material world? Is it temporary? Is it eternal? Who created the material world? That's all Sambandha Gyan. And then also what's called Abhideya Gyan, which means how to practice the basic aspects of sadhana bhakti, which is chanting, you know, rising early in the morning, chanting, offering your food to Krishna. Simple things. First initiation, Prabhupada said, can be given very liberally. But second, Prabhupada said, is very strict.
As you were mentioning yesterday, it's easy to be, but difficult to continuing.
Yeah.
Can you just please a little bit more?
Because okay.
We don't have enough time on that.
And okay, yeah, so it's easy, yeah. It takes the mode of goodness and determination, because we sort of talked about determination a little earlier today, to be able to continue something year after year. That's very, it is quite difficult. That's a test. And, let me see, there's an example. There's an example I gave in my own life. I always chanted my rounds. What I was talking about the other day, New Year's Day, I was talking about making promises or vows, which we call resolutions. Isn't it? You have New Year's resolutions here. And I just read a study in the newspaper that said that 30% of the people who make New Year's resolutions don't keep them for one day. Pretty good. I think it was in USA Today or something like that. Very interesting. And then probably another 70% don't keep them for more than a few months. So it requires a cultivation and proper association to be able to keep one's determination. As Krishna says in the Gita, karanam guna sangasya sadasad janma jonishu, that the living entity becomes conditioned in this world due to guna sangha, association with the modes of nature. So if you associate with lower modes, what do I mean by associate with lower modes? You can associate with people of lower modes, music of lower modes, food of lower modes. Krishna talks about food in different modes of nature. You know, food of the mode of goodness is very healthy for you and gives bodily flesh, doesn't make you too fat. Food of the mode of passion is too hot, spicy. Like if you have a chili salad, you know, with chili peppers. Chili peppers and horseradish. And then the food of the mode of ignorance is putrid, stale, decomposed. But also, in addition to that, you can have food in the mode of goodness that's prepared by someone who is in the improper consciousness, and that can actually drag you down to the mode of ignorance. That's interesting. That's a story for the Mahabharata. Because people ask, how did Dronacharya, Kripacharya, Grandfather Bhishma, why did they fight on the wrong side of the battle of Kurukshetra? And the reason is that their consciousness had been overtaken by demons. I'll tell you the whole story about that. Once upon a time, Duryodhana was defeated by the Gandharvas. And he was saved by Arjuna, who was friends with the Gandharvas, with Chitaratha, who was one of the Gandharvas, head of the Gandharvas. And Duryodhana was so upset that he got ready to commit suicide by sitting down and doing yoga. And while he was sitting down and doing yoga, the demons came to him and they talked to him. They gave him a pep talk. And they said, don't worry, we're going to take over the consciousness of Bhishma. We're going to take over the consciousness of Kripacharya and Dronacharya. And the way they did that was explained by Prabhupada, is that because the Kripacharya, Dronacharya, and Grandfather Bhishma were eating impure food that was cooked in the kitchen of Duryodhana. So their consciousness became affected. And you know, when Krishna went to Hastinapur, he refused to eat that food. But Duryodhana said, please come and have dinner with us. And Krishna said, no. And who did Krishna eat with? Vidura. And it was just that very simple porridge. Because Vidura was a pure devotee of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So consciousness can be affected. So in other words, Prabhupada said that Krishna consciousness is like a razor's edge. You've heard that expression before. If you're not real careful, you can be deviated. Because even Krishna in the Gita says, even one of the senses upon which you contemplate can pull you away from Krishna consciousness. And we all know that famous verse, second chapter, Jayato Vishak Puntam Sango Stesha Vajayate, Sangat Sanjayate Kama Kama Krodha Vijayate. When you contemplate a something in this world, a sense object, then you become attached, you become lusty, you become bewildered, etc. like that. So one has to be very careful. Very, very careful. Because your consciousness can be pulled away in a second, and then you lose your determination. That one should be very much one-pointed. Like Arjuna, the eye of the bird example. One has to be focused on the goal. So yeah, there's danger. Padam padam yad vipadam natesha. So, is that alright? So any other questions or comments? Yes.
Marty, I have a question. If I'm a Shudra, should I still aspire for initiation, at least first initiation? Or should I just continue doing some kind of Vaishnava seva?
No, be a Vaishnava. Don't worry about it. Don't be too humble. You're proud that you're so humble.
The camera is what you thought.
What?
Somebody in the camera for you that I'm Shudra.
No, no, no. Don't be proud of your humility. So, no, you should aspire to control your senses, you should aspire to be compassionate to all living entities, or you should aspire for these qualities. But if you don't attain these qualities, then just keep chanting Hare Krishna. But still, everybody should take first initiation at least. That's Harinam initiation is for everybody. And second initiation is also for doing deity worship, for worshiping the Murti form of the Lord. But one really has to be a Brahmin. And another funny story, I'll tell you, Prabhupada was giving initiation to someone, and he was trying to teach him second initiation, Brahmin initiation. You know, Brahmin initiation, you count on your fingers for the Gayatri, like you hold the thread like this, and you count up to 10. So Prabhupada was teaching him how to count to 10, which was 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. So Prabhupada kept teaching him, all right, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. And after about 20 times, he didn't learn. And Prabhupada said, you're not a Brahmin, you're a Shudra. Can you imagine that your initiation being told you're a Shudra? That's pretty interesting. So, that was a funny story. You were there for that one. So, any other questions? Yes?
One question. Should one look for a pure devotee and get initiated?
Yes, you should be initiated by your...
ISKCON should be only pick one from ISKCON.
Is that a controversial question or not? First of all... we accept... I mean, I'm talking about myself, and this is when I'm trying to help other people understand that Prabhupada is actually a very special personality. Prabhupada took the position of founder acharya. Now, one thing that is quite interesting is that even Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur did not take that title or name, founder Acharya. If you read all of his works, he never took that name. And he gave that name to four modern personalities, the heads of the different sampradayas. We're talking about like Ramanujacharya, Vishnuswami, and Bharkacharya, like that. So, and Prabhupada did something that was predicted by all the acharyas, by the Vedic literatures, and what did he do? Is he spread Krishna consciousness all over the world, something that no acharya had previously done in 11 short years. So Prabhupada was given that name, and he accepted that name of founder acharya, and he insisted upon that name. When the devotees even left that name out in his publications, he got angry. Because they just put his name down, one publication, A.C. Bhaktivinoda Swami. Prabhupada said, no, ISKCON, founder acharya, like that. So Prabhupada's position is very unique, even amongst great devotees. So my point is that one should aspire to serve Prabhupada. And what does that mean, to aspire to serve Prabhupada? I mean, you can make up your own concoction about it. But to aspire to serve Prabhupada means to serve what he wanted us to serve, which is the International Society for Krishna Consciousness. We were talking about this last night, too. That the International Society for Krishna Consciousness, ISKCON is a short acronym for it, is Prabhupada's organization and a manifestation of Prabhupada's desire to spread Krishna consciousness everywhere. Because in order to change the world, which is what Prabhupada wanted, Prabhupada just didn't want to, he didn't want just a bunch of small sanghas. He wanted to create a revolution in the world. You need an organization. Now generally organizations are troubled. Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur said that organizations generally take away the spirit of a religion. You lose the spirit of, because you become organized and hierarchical, and then you have a boss, and then there's money, and there's all sorts of assets. But Prabhupada wanted it because without an organization, you can't spread Krishna consciousness in a big way. So in order to have an organization, in order to be a follower of Prabhupada, if you actually read what Prabhupada wanted, one should work for Prabhupada's organization, which is a manifestation of Prabhupada. So, therefore, to work for Prabhupada's organization, it requires that one be connected with the organization by following the structure which Srila Prabhupada gave us, which is the Governing Body Commission. The Governing Body Commission at ISKCON is not perfect. We're not claiming that. It's not like many years ago, I think it was in the year 1000, the Pope and the Catholic Church declared himself to be infallible. There's a history. It's really interesting. I've studied different religious histories. And can you imagine someone saying, I'm infallible? But we're not claiming infallibility. That means ISKCON, there will be some mistakes. The GBC will make some mistakes. There'll be problems in ISKCON. We gave the example last night of a boat. The boat is going through the water. It's rocking from side to side. You may be getting a little nauseous. It may be very confusing and nauseous. I gave the example last night for those who were at my class, that when I was young, we took a boat across the Atlantic to the Caribbean, and it was rocking, and I was hanging off the side of the boat, regurgitating, and I wanted to get out. But obviously, I didn't jump into the waves, because I'm still here today. So ISKCON is like that. So we remain, and if there's a problem in ISKCON, we try to correct it. Remain faithful. I mean, it's just like a husband and wife. You don't expect your spouse to be perfect, but you remain. And you work out the issues. I mean, that's the Vedic system. Not that you get divorced just because your wife didn't spice things one night the right way. Isn't it? I mean, a terrible idea. So in Kali Yuga, people are ready to reject relationships, commitments. So to work within ISKCON, as I said, means working under the direction of the GBC, and there's certain people who are authorized to initiate in ISKCON. But whoever you're initiated by, you get to serve Prabhupada as your primary source of siksha. And if you go outside of ISKCON, that person will not be connecting you with Prabhupada in the same way. I'm sorry. I mean, that's the difference. There may be many great devotees, pure devotees outside of ISKCON. I'm not claiming ISKCON has an exclusivity on great devotees. There's many people, and I have friends and people outside of ISKCON. I spent a lot of time in India, spent a lot of time in Vrindavan and Govardhan and Radhakund and stuff like that. And I'm very friendly with people. I'm not criticizing anyone else. However, if you want to be connected with Prabhupada, who is predicted by Lord Nityananda, predicted by Bhaktivinoda Thakur, predicted in the Vedic literatures, then one has to be connected with Prabhupada through an authorized representative of Prabhupada in ISKCON. So that's your choice. I'm not saying you can't go back to Godhead doing something else, but I want to be connected with this great mission that is going to change the face of society. I mean, even now, we have one devotee who's become a Congress lady in the United States Congress, Tulsi Gabbard. You heard of her before. So this is, it's starting to happen. And she, you know, Diwali, she was speaking about the Gita. I mean, she talks about the Gita a lot and preaches about Krishna. She's openly a devotee of the Hare Krishna movement. Pretty amazing, isn't it? She's using Prabhupada's Gita too. So it's starting to happen. Yes, it may take 100 or 200 or 300 years. I'm not saying tomorrow you're going to see the President of the United States, Barack Obama. That's a play on words. Of course, Barack Obama carries Hanuman around in his pocket. Did you know that?
Yes.
He has a little Hanuman he carries around with him all the time. So we're already making progress. But you know, I want to be part of this great mission of Srila Prabhupada. I want to be connected with Prabhupada. And I want whoever wants to be connected and part of this mission to save humanity. It's a very exciting mission. I don't want to be part of just like a few mosques or temples here and there. It's boring. I'm from the 1960s. I was a revolutionary in the 1960s. You know, that was the time when we had so many revolutionaries. So I was a revolutionary. So many of us were revolutionaries. So I want to be part of a revolution. And so that's why I'd like to stay connected to Prabhupada. And Prabhupada, there's no doubt, is an absolutely pure devotee. So let's say you take initiation in ISKCON. Then your primary source of shiksha is always Srila Prabhupada. But of course you should be careful who you take initiation from, obviously. It's not that you just, what is it, eeny, meeny, miny, mo, catch a guru by the toe. if he hollers, let him go. You know? You heard that before? It's not. So we should be careful, yes. So
you're saying probably like Kripacharya and all that, they were eating not just in a good food.
Yeah.
Suppose we go some places and we are offered the food. If we just do the prasadam prayer, is that okay to make it as a prasadam?
The consciousness, Prabhupada said, the consciousness of the person preparing the food enters into the food.
That may not be always good.
I know. I'll tell you an interesting story in my own history that When I first started traveling and preaching, I was a brahmachari. This was in 1972. And I was traveling with someone who is a sannyasi, still is a sannyasi today. And we thought, you know, we didn't have to be careful. So we just like went into the supermarket, bought everything, put it in a bag. Sri Vishnu, Sri Vishnu, Sri Vishnu. And we discovered our consciousness was actually getting affected by that. So then we decided, even though we were traveling in a van, that we would cook our own food, even roll out rotis on the wheel well of a van. And then it kept the consciousness up.
Hanuman song.
He wants me to play Hanuman song? Wait a second. So my experience is that if one's careful what they eat, because according to the Ayurvedas, whatever you eat becomes transformed into blood. And then that blood is the carrier of the consciousness. So your consciousness gets affected. So I'm personally very careful wherever I go. And I have a determination that I really don't eat something unless I know who's cooking and I make sure that they're consciousness is all right. So even when I go and travel, of course, generally I stay in people's homes, so I know who's cooking for me. But when I go and travel, let's say, I don't go to the restaurants or anything like that, and sometimes I cook for myself. And actually in India, that's a tradition for Brahmins. They would cook for themselves. Prabhupada talks about how even in the Indian army, if there were some Brahmanas, they would be given their own place to cook. It's interesting, isn't it? They wouldn't eat in the common mess with everybody else. So that's one of the Brahminical procedures, that you really are careful where you eat, or how much you eat, or who cooks for you. So I'm careful. Like Prabhupada actually said, one of the injunctions was we shouldn't eat food cooked by non-devotees, because it can affect the consciousness, make the consciousness wicked. It's a fact. It affects the consciousness. What can I say? I'm not saying it's a prohibition, but one has to be careful about that. Okay, any other questions? I'm going to thank everybody for being attentive. So, should we chant something? What?
Yeah, if you want to get, sit down on the top there.
Sit down on the top. All right, all glories to Srila Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada, Ki Jai.